Hello, everybody. Welcome to Trivial Thoughts. I'm your host, Dylan, and this is the show where I talk about anything and everything, because when you get down to it, it's all pretty much just really trivial, isn't it? That's the nihilist in me speaking. Okay. So I got a few things that's been going around that I want to talk about. I just actually learned a little bit before I'm recording this podcast that Anchor, which is the app that I use to record this, just got bought out by Spotify about a month ago. I've never used Spotify myself. I don't know what Spotify is like. I think it's a music service like Pandora or iHeartRadio, but apparently it's a pretty big service. I've heard of Spotify, I've just never used it, but I know a lot of people are really into it, and a lot of people subscribe to it. But apparently they're planning on getting in the podcasting game. They're really trying to ramp up their podcast efforts, which makes sense since the dominant form of media is video, and YouTube basically dominates like all internet video. Everybody goes to YouTube. Everybody uses YouTube. Hell, I myself use YouTube about probably 5 hours a day, honestly, way more than I should. So yeah, it makes sense for a company like Spotify to get in that sort of game. But here's what really kind of irritates me, though, about this kind of deal. It's always with deals like this. You know, you have these companies like Anchor that sit here and say, we want to create a place where everybody can come and make podcasts and can publish them wherever they want and however they want. But obviously, if you sell yourself out to a large company like Spotify, who is interested in being the one-stop destination for podcasts, are they going to let Anchor let their podcasters publish their shows on Google or the Apple Store or, I don't know, all the different places that you can publish with Anchor? But those are just the two off the top of my head that I know of. But my point still stands, you know, is Spotify basically just going to tell Anchor, okay, all of your podcasters are now going to publish to Spotify and nowhere else? Or are they just going to partner with Spotify and say, yeah, okay, this is going to be our main destination, but we'll let you, you know, publish to other places to kind of bring interest to, you know, our service and bring people into our ecosystem? Hopefully that would be the, you know, the way that they'll do it. But you never know with these large companies, because, you know, they want everybody in their ecosystem. They, you know, if you can listen to a podcast from the App Store or the Google Play Store, why go to Spotify? You know, it's a very real concern, and I don't know how it's going to go. I don't use this app this much. I think this is actually my second podcast. The first one, I think, is just awful. I didn't even publish it because I was just like, oh, God, this sounds so cringy. But yeah, you know, I hopefully one day could get into the podcasting business. You know, it's weird with me. I always seem to get really passionate about one particular thing, and I will focus on that thing for quite a bit. But then, like, at the drop of a hat, I can immediately become disinterested in that thing and then focus on something else in, like, a rinse and repeat kind of cycle. So I could be interested in podcasting for like 4 days, maybe like 2 months. And then, you know, after that, it's like, oh man, no, I want to make YouTube videos or something. Like, man, I should focus on that. But doing a podcast is something that I've always wanted to do, like, for years now. And a lot of people have told me that I should do it. And yeah, I mean, with Anchor, you know, when I discovered the app, I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, this is exactly what I was needing, even though a lot of people kind of are wary of Anchor because apparently in their terms of service it says that they own your podcast. But I mean, let's be realistic here. Like, anything that you publish on any kind of app or anything you publish on the internet is owned by somebody. You never really own the stuff that you put on the internet. So to look at Anchor and say, oh, well, I don't trust that because, you know, their terms of service says they own my podcast, but I'm going to go publish it to Spotify because, you know, it's not like they can do anything with my podcast if they don't like it. Like, of course they can. You publish it to a service and they don't like you or they don't like what you have to say, of course they can take down your podcast at any particular moment. Look what happened to Alex Jones. You know, he basically just got completely removed from the internet in a way that I've never seen happen to anybody. So, yeah, you know, I love Anchor. I really do. I think this is honestly the best app that you could possibly use for podcasting. But of course, I don't, you know that much about podcasting, so what do I know? But I love this app, and hopefully this whole Spotify buying out Anchor deal doesn't mess up the app in too big of a way. Hopefully they still maintain their ideal and their commitment to being able to publish podcasts everywhere they can so that somebody can get as wide of an audience as they can. And I mean, really, when you get down to it, like, I have never seen a service like Anchor for podcasts. I'm not trying to jerk off the app. I'm not a spokesman, you know. I'm just saying that this really is an amazing app, and it does worry me. This deal with Spotify does worry me because this app is basically like the YouTube of podcasts. You know, where else can you go with it? What other app can you use? Where else, you know, what other service can you use that you can make a podcast, and then with that service, you know, they'll put ads on your podcast. They'll put sponsorships with your podcast so that you can make money, the way that YouTube does with like advertisers and memberships and whatnot. And I know it's not necessarily a good comparison because YouTube is just going through a huge shit show right now. With what is it now, their third adpocalypse. But I mean, realistically speaking, when your entire service is, you know, user-generated content, obviously, and especially when you become so large that it is basically impossible to manage the content in way, you know, in a way that the advertisers want. Of course you're gonna run into problems. You know, honestly, let's get into the YouTube thing, really, because I'm so tired of this whole YouTube drama. Like, every couple of months, ever since 2016, it's been everybody on YouTube complaining about, oh, well, you changed this now, and so my livelihood is ruined, or, oh, you're changing this feature now, so I guess all you care about is money. Well, of course YouTube cares about money. They're one of the largest internet companies in the entire world, and it is so expensive to run a site like that. I can't even imagine how much money they have to spend to keep all the servers up, and how much money they have to spend on bandwidth and memory and all the stuff to keep YouTube running. Like, 500 hours of content are uploaded every single minute to YouTube. Of course they have to consider money in the, you know, the service that they're doing, because if the advertisers are not advertising on YouTube and they have no workflow, realistically they can only expect Google to bail them out for so long until it just becomes you know, unfeasible. But I'm really tired of the whole thing from both sides. Like, I'm tired of the creators constantly bitching and moaning about YouTube changing stuff when they're basically forced to change stuff because the advertisers keep threatening to pull the ads and they won't be getting any money anymore. And YouTube has to have that. But I'm also tired of these advertisers using this facade of fake outrage, like, oh, well, we stand for family values, or we don't agree with what YouTube is doing in this particular instance, so we're gonna pull our ads, even though, you know, it's an issue where YouTube probably wasn't aware of it, and there are so many different things that YouTube has to focus on day after day that obviously there's gonna be, you know, cracks in the, not security. There's gonna be stuff that the watch eye of YouTube is not gonna be able to see at all times. You can't realistically tackle every single problem that YouTube has at once in a way that's gonna satisfy everybody. Because either the creators of YouTube are gonna get screwed over because, I mean, just look at what's happening now with YouTube. Like, there was I don't know exactly what I'm allowed to I don't know exactly what I'm allowed to say with, podcasts and whatnot. Nah, I'll just come out and say it. There was pedophile rings in YouTube comment sections that were basically, congregating in videos of young children on YouTube and timestamping the videos so that, they could fetishize the kids in the videos and, timestamp specific instances where maybe their dress had gone up a little too high, or maybe they were bending over a little bit or something like that. And it was really just awful, nasty comments. Like, it was horrible comments that YouTube, yeah, should have been doing something about. But because the advertisers were fleeing and it was becoming a whole shit show for YouTube, they basically had to act really quickly, and they changed the algorithm so now that if there's certain things being said in the comment section, you have the chance to have your entire channel denied comment sections, so that your entire channel will be striked and no new video you upload could have comments on it. And that's awful, because I was on a PewDiePie video. No, it wasn't. It was a T-Series video. I was watching a T-Series video, and a bunch of PewDiePie fans were going into the comment section and saying things like hashtag CP, PewDiePie, CP obviously being child porn. And they were hoping that the algorithm would pick up, like, all of these different people saying hashtag CP, and they would think that, oh, well, this comment section is just full of stuff that I'm told to look out for, so now I'm gonna make sure T-Series' entire channel can't have comments on it. So it's really easy for something like that to be abused, and it's one of those just huge sweeping across the board changes that just is rife with abuse and exploitation, and it can really harm users and creators. But, of course, at the same time, if you actually focus on stuff that is good for the creators and is good for the users, well, then, the corporations might take issue with certain things that are being overlooked, like the comment section issue, or might, take issue that, oh, well, you're benefiting these users that have opinions that is not good for our brand, so we're gonna pull advertisements and you're not gonna get any money. So either way, YouTube is basically just screwed at this point. Like, it's just gonna keep getting worse from here, because YouTube has already for years now been shifting towards more of like a corporate status, and users have basically just been having to deal with one hardship after the other. But, that's what happens when YouTube wasn't originally designed to be a job. You're doing something that became a job as a result of, certain tweaking of the system. It was, YouTube, if you can out of the blue one day become a YouTuber and that be your job, out of the blue one day that can also be taken away from you. But, like somebody said, in the comment section once, I saw a comment in the comment section once, and somebody said, "You can complain about YouTube all you want, but you're still gonna come here to watch videos." And that's true. That is true, I complain about YouTube all the time, but at the end of the day, I'm still spending 5 hours a day there watching YouTube videos, and people are still posting on the site, even though, they're constantly getting screwed over by it. So I don't see anything changing anytime soon. Let's move on to a cheerier subject. So, I saw Alita Battle Angel, I believe, last week. Last week, week and a half ago, somewhere around there. But I saw Alita Battle Angel, when it around the time when it came out, and man, is it a good movie. There's definitely problems with the movie, I'll say. The story definitely has problems, but it is such an enjoyable movie. Like, you can tell that this is a Robert Rodriguez movie. If you've ever seen the Spy Kids movie, because I remember Spy Kids used to be like stupid as hell, story-wise, but man, they like even I think that Robert Rodriguez, he just has this way about him, man. Like, I don't know how he does it, but the stories in his movies are usually r either really bad, they don't make sense, or there's basically just kind of no story at all, but yet the movie is just still so enjoyable. And I think the first two Spy Kids movies really show that. And didn't he make Dawn of the Dead with Quentin Tarantino? I think he did. I think he directed Dawn of the Dead, which is like one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. And Alita Battle Angel pretty much proves that he is still the king of doing these short on story but heavy on enjoyment kind of movies. Because the visual effects are just so stunning in this movie. Like, oh my God. I can't. It blew my mind how good everything looked. You know, like a lot of people are complaining about this uncanny valley effect nowadays in movies where you see something that's supposed to be human, like Alita. You know, she looks human, but she's got like those really big anime eyes. And so some people get really revolted by that kind of stuff. They're like, you know, this looks human, but something's kind of off about it, so I don't know how to feel about it. I never got that feeling once in the movie. Like, it got to the point where I forgot that she was an anime character. She was like an animated character. Same thing with Thanos in Infinity War. And that's what a lot of these companies don't understand, man, and a lot of these directors don't really get. You know, you can have good special effects. Like, you have to have special effects that, you know, are good and you pour time into and, you know, looks interesting. It doesn't have to look necessarily realistic, even though Thanos and Alita do. They look very almost photorealistic. You know, if you want to go that far, good. But the special effects don't necessarily have to look photorealistic. They have to look interesting, and you have to have characters or actors that give such a good performance and suck you in that it gets to the point that you're not even paying attention to the fact that it's an animated character or it's a CGI character. You are focusing on the character and their performance. I think Netflix films are really good. Netflix films are a really good way to describe that, because if anybody's ever watched a Netflix film, you know, you can tell that their special effects are definitely fake. But it still looks good. It still looks interesting. Look at the robot from, oh, what was it? It was a remake of an old show that they put on Netflix. I'm blanking on the name right now, man. Oh, God, I knew I would. Yeah, they remade an old show, like a space show from the 60s, I believe, where this family is marooned on a distant planet, and their kid has like this robot that he found that helps the family. Ah, that is gonna bug me to no end now. Sorry, I didn't mean to hit the table and shake the camera. Oh man, that's gonna bug me now. But it was anyway. Or look at A Series of Unfortunate Events. You know, like, the CGI, you know, it looks fake, but again, it looks interesting and it looks good enough to where you're like, this is enjoyable to watch. The only instance where I was really creeped out by, or you know, the only time I ever got that uncanny valley effect was in A Series of Unfortunate Events, because I think it's either season one, like late season one, or season two. The baby Sunny. Sunny Baudelaire, it got to a point where the actress wasn't young enough where she could just kind of make silly faces and they could get away with it, but she wasn't old enough where she could actually like understand how to act. So they put a CGI face over her and it looked so weird because you had like this 2 or 3 year old with this CGI baby face, and it was so uncanny. I was like, that, I understand what they're talking about now with that uncanny valley, because that is just really distorted. That looks really off, and that is uncomfortable. But that's really the only time I've ever got that uncanny valley effect. And that's really the only time I've ever really noticed like a Netflix special effect where I was like, oh my God, that looks so just off. That looks so bad. Because generally, I think they're, you know, they, it, again, it's an instance of they have good CGI, not photorealistic, but good and interesting CGI. But anyway, back to Alita Battle Angel. I got off topic there. Yeah, it is, you know, a CGI heavy movie, but it kind of has to be since it's set in like a not too distant future, like all apocalypse movies are. And everybody in the movie is basically like a robot. I think there was only one or two instances where I noticed something that looked like really, really fake and looked off, but I think there was a reason. There was a very good reason. I won't go into spoilers though. But yeah, you know, it's a very CGI heavy movie, but it looks fantastic. It looks so beautiful. The characters are just like so unbelievably photorealistic, and they just all give amazing performances. And the world building is so good. Like, I was watching a review, I think it was like a Channel Awesome review, like a Nostalgia Critic review of Alita Battle Angel. And, you know, they pointed out how every single sci-fi movie nowadays is set in like this distant future world where, you know, everything's gone to hell, and it all just kind of looks like Blade Runner from, you know, the Harrison Ford movie from like 30 years ago, 40 years ago, whenever it was. You know, they all just kind of do the Blade Runner thing where it's tall skyscrapers and, you know, everything is dark and grim like a Zack Snyder film. And it just has the same tone, but Alita Battle Angel was very interesting because it almost reminded me of that old animated Astro Boy film that came out like 10 years ago, because you have this like beautiful utopia floating in the sky city above, and then you have like this rural like South Chicago kind of area where, you know, it's robotic and, you know, it's dirty and it's gringy and or grungy, and, you know, it's dystopic and it's sci-fi-ish, but it still looks interesting. Like, it has its own kind of identity to it, and it has its own kind of world to it. It doesn't feel like it's really ripping off like other sci-fi movies. It does kind of remind me again of that old Astro Boy movie, because, you know, it's just weird. It's so weird how it really was like that, actually. It kind of was ripping off Astro Boy a little bit. Because I'll have to watch the movie. I don't remember exactly what the surface world was like. I think it was kind of like, no, wait a minute. There was a Colosseum in the movie, too. Yeah, they basically just ripped off Astro Boy. To be fair, though, I don't know if the old Astro Boy animated movie, like, I don't know if that was inspired like directly from the old Taketsu comic book, but so yeah, that is weird. I'm just realizing that. So mild criticism, I guess, since it's ripping off an animated kids movie from like 10 years ago, like the world building wise, but it's still a fantastic movie. I mean, it's such a beautiful movie. The world building is amazing. I love the characters, even though they, some of them can be kind of flat at times, especially like with the dialogue that they're given. The characters are just so likable. Even a lot of the villains are just so likable. Great movie. Yeah, the story is a little skim, and you know, it's weird. Most of the time I have this complaint where anime movies feel like they're trying to cram 10 hours worth of story into a 2-hour movie, and this one doesn't really. It almost feels like It almost feels like they're planning sequels to the movie, but they're not really sure exactly how they should go about it. That's the most that I guess I would I'll spoil about the movie is that the story does feel not as fleshed out as it should be. But hopefully we do get a sequel that fleshes more things out. But I highly recommend the movie, honestly. I really do. Like, I don't know where these critics are coming from saying this movie is only like a 60% or a 6 out of 10. I can kind of see, I mean, I'll agree with certain criticisms of the movie, but these people who are basically saying that these criticisms basically ruin the movie, I won't say that at all. This is actually a thoroughly enjoyable movie, and I'll actually go as far and say that this is probably the best live-action anime movie I've ever seen. Even better than that Ghost in the Shell movie with Scarlett Johansson. Because even though that movie was visually, I think, a little bit more interesting, just because Ghost in the Shell is one of the most visually interesting stories of all time, Alita is, it's just better, honestly, because it doesn't try to be like this big deep philosophical movie and then like basically chicken out and just succumb to Hollywood cliches, because that's what it did. The Ghost in the Shell movie was just disappointing because it's supposed to have these really deep philosophical ideas, and the Hollywood movie just did not go through with that at all. It was really disappointing. Hollywood in general has a problem with that, honestly, when you get down to it. Like, when was the last time we actually had a Hollywood movie that had, like, really big, deep philosophical themes? I think Infinity War kind of did that with Thanos, and that's probably why he's one of my favorite villains of all time, just because he really did have this type of, like, philosophical insight into him that a lot of villains nowadays really don't get. But man, I think the last time we saw that was like from The Dark Knight, honestly, from like 2007. Was that in 2007? That movie's 12 years old now? My God. That's insane. Wow. Yeah. Oh, so apparently Steven Spielberg is petitioning the Oscars to remove Netflix movies from consideration. Even if he wants to basically change the rules so Netflix can't put a few of their movies in a theater for a couple days and then be a contender for the Oscars. And I kind of do see his point there, because that does kind of feel just like a token gesture. But I feel it's so stupid to not consider movies on like Netflix and Amazon as real movies compared to movies that are in the theaters. Because when you get down to it, what is a quote unquote real movie? Like, if I watch Apocalypse Now on YouTube, does that make it any less of a movie than if I go see some shitty CGI animated kid-friendly crap from Sony or DreamWorks in a theater? Like, when Netflix is spending, when they spend $100 million on a movie, and you have an acclaimed director and you have acclaimed talent in your movie, how can you honestly sit there and say, oh, well, this isn't a real movie because it wasn't in a theater? The Emoji Movie, on the other hand, that's a real movie. That should be able to win an Oscar, but this award-worthy movie that's on Netflix should be disqualified just because it's on Netflix. I don't understand that logic, honestly. And this is just the. This is the Hollywood elite just defending their territory more than anything when you get down to it. But I still think it's absolutely stupid. I don't really pay attention to the Oscars myself, because I think the Oscars themselves are just blatantly ridiculous. People have, what was the contender for Best Picture? I think it was something like The Green Book or something, some bullshit movie I've never even heard of. And it won over like these huge critically acclaimed movies that everybody was saying should win the Oscar, but then these critics were like, no, this movie that I've never heard of. I mean, maybe it was a good movie, I guess, but I mean, I didn't think Black Panther was Oscar worthy. I don't think it's award worthy, but I mean, when everybody is saying that Black Panther should win the Oscar for Best Picture, you got, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something there, you know? Again, it goes back to that whole, really, I mean, it comes back to the divide. I mean, again, look at Alita. Like, you got the critics saying it sucks, and you got the audience saying it's great. And that's kind of what the Oscars are, really. But, man, personally, I didn't even think that Black Panther should have been a contender. I personally would have gone with Infinity War, because I think Infinity War was way deeper than Black Panther was. Black Panther, when you get down to it was just another shitty Marvel origin story movie. It had a great villain, not gonna lie, it had a great villain, but that's about all it had. Like, the humor was bleh. The characters, for the most part, were just bleh. The special effects sucked. Yeah, I don't see what the big deal was. I mean, I like what Black Panther was going for with the whole black culture thing. And, you know, this really got me. Black Panther, I think, really was the movie that kind of got me into this whole mindset of, wow, I want to see more movies from acclaimed directors, like, exploring different cultures. And I want to see not even acclaimed directors, you know, I want to see new directors from different kind of backgrounds, like, you know, minority backgrounds that have a different perspective that can bring that perspective to life, you know? Because a lot of people claim, you know, a lot of people complain that, oh, well, there's not enough black people in movies and there's not enough black directors. And it's like, no, they're right, you know? Like, including a black, you know, including like two black guys in your movie does not count as diversity. Like, let's make movies where people are actually exploring like different countries like Africa and you know, South America and China, and I want to see actual different kind of perspectives from these cultures and these actors and directors that aren't just like Hollywood stereotypes or misconceptions that Americans have about these cultures. I'll say Black Panther did that for me. You know, it really opened my eyes and made me want to see different kind of it wanted to make me see different movies. But that's about it. You know, that's about all it did. I'm not gonna say that it's award worthy because it's not. So that's about all I got from movies, honestly. Let's go into politics here for a little bit. Bernie Sanders just announced his campaign for 2020, for the presidential run of 2020. And honestly, I couldn't be happier. I really couldn't. I'm so glad that he started to run. And, you know, I live in an area where pretty much everybody is pro-Trump. Everybody is anti-Bernie, anti-Clinton, and anti-Democrat. And I myself am a Democrat. You know, I more align with the Democrat ideals than I do Republican ideals. So I'm really glad that Bernie was running. Honestly, I really do hope he wins this time because I think he is really the one man that can stand up to the corporations and the establishments and say, we don't need your money. We don't want your money. We represent the people. We don't represent the establishments and the corporations who just want more profits and money and greed. So that's good. You know, I do hope he wins, honestly. Overall, I think we're seeing a really big shift in politics. You know, I'm really cynical when it comes to politics. I really just kind of turn on the news and I read everything that happens. And to me, it's like, well, nothing is changing and nothing's ever gonna change because it's all just the same crap in a, you know, it's all the same crap in a different wrapper. But, oh, my leg went asleep there. Damn it. But yeah, you know, we are getting a shift in the political spectrum, because the 2018 midterm elections really did show us that the people are tired of all of these bought-out politicians and all of these lobbyists just vying for whatever the corporations want and not the people. And we basically had a blue wave come in, and we had a bunch of people that are like, no, we don't want your corporate dollars. We want the people's money because we represent the people. And I'm really glad about that, actually. I'm really glad, honestly. Hopefully, we do see more positive change, in my opinion, more positive change, come 2020 and come in the future. And hopefully, we can start seeing things that I think are important, like, universal health care and universal education, and start putting money in. Our infrastructure and into, American problems instead of spending money overseas and adding to the overbloated military budget. Yeah. Didn't care for Clinton myself, but yeah, I hope Bernie does win, honestly. Might be a long shot though, because obviously Trump will run again, and I don't know if I would say if he's doomed, because I haven't seen his election numbers, but I know that there are still a lot of people that are like fanatically devoted to Donald Trump, even though even after all of the stupid shit that he's done and how much he's hurt the country. There's still that fanatical base that is still like religiously devoted to him. And then if Hillary Clinton runs again, oh God, that's gonna be a whole nother thing. Like honestly, if Bernie was elected in 20, if he was the Democratic nominee in 2016, he would have been president. There's no doubt about it. But these Democrats, they have no idea what they're doing. The DNC has no idea what they're doing. They're just a bunch. They basically screwed themselves over. They're a bunch of idiots. That's all I got for politics. I don't really feel like talking about politics too much right now, if I'm being all honest. If I'm talking about politics, I'm gonna have to get a bunch of issues together and devote a whole podcast to it. But this podcast is already going on for almost 40 minutes now, so. I can't devote a whole nother half an hour to politics, 'cause that's just gonna be a whole bunch of, it's gonna be a half an hour of me talking about issues that I don't have laid out in front of me, and I don't have facts in front of me, so I'm probably gonna make a lot of mistakes, and if anybody listens to this podcast, they're gonna call me on it. So I'll leave, that'll be my statement on politics, I guess, for this episode. Support democratic issues. I hope Bernie wins in 2020. And I like the blue wave of 2018, because we got a bunch, we're finally starting to see some change. We're finally starting to get people in office that are for the people and not the, the rich and the corporations. That's my statement on politics for this episode. Yeah, so we're almost 40 minutes into the podcast. Yeah, so almost, wow, 40 minutes already. Jesus, how the time flies when you're actually talking about stuff that you find interesting. Hopefully I didn't sound too much. Hopefully I didn't sound too much like shitting in this podcast. I know I probably repeated myself like a bunch of times about everything, but thank you to anybody who's going to be listening to this podcast. I'm definitely going to be publishing this one, and hopefully this will be the first podcast in a long line of podcasts, and this can become, a pretty regular show that I start doing. So thank you to everybody who will listen and support me, and I will catch you in the next episode.